So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And I'm senior editor Devinder Hardwar.
And this week, we're going to talk all about telehealth and basically how it's helping us get through this coronavirus pandemic, its potential limitations, as well as the impact it could have, kind of the lasting change it could have for medicine and health overall in the future.
All of a sudden, it's very useful to be able to see a doctor from your home. Imagine that.
Yeah, I don't know why no one thought about this. Before we get to all of that, please make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Leave us a review or a rating on iTunes and send us your thoughts and feedback to podcast@engadget.com, especially if you like us. If you don't, do that
please,
too.
Please, only if you like us.
Anyway, so last week we talked all about how working from home, which is enabled by tech a lot, is basically the new way of life for all of us now. And this week it seems to just kind of have naturally progressed into how telehealth is also going to be the default method of seeing your doctor probably from now on. What do you think, Devendra?
It is kind of funny, right? We've basically, we've normalized these things that were kind of specialty scenarios before. You know, I think most people would be like, if you're sick, you go to the doctor, you go to one of those like, in New York, we have these urgent care things like CityMD that are just everywhere because our health system sucks and it's really hard to see the doctor you're supposed to. But instead of that, like telehealth has always been around. Very good insurance companies would occasionally offer it. We get it through our job here. And I've used it. I've used it when I've had a cold. My wife uses it quite a bit. It is just helpful. And also because like the idea of going to doctor, especially during a pandemic like this, is bad. Like whenever you go to the hospital or anything, you are also opening yourself up to whatever is going on at that. Like you could potentially get infected just by trying to go to the doctor. This avoids that.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole thing about, like, staying at home, stay at home, everyone. But then if you feel a little sick, what are you going to do? So for me, yesterday, I talked to my therapist on the phone, and he actually gave me some insight as to what happened. So you're totally right, Devendra. Like, of all his patients, like, in the past, every commercial insurance provider has mostly covered telehealth, so teletherapy sessions as part of that. But the things like Medicare and Medicaid have never really offered that sort of coverage. The good news is this week we saw news that Medicare is expanding telehealth coverage. So if you're on Medicare, you're going to be able to see a doctor through your computer or through your phone, like just doing it online. According to my therapist too, like in the past, like for us, we did our session through this software, and he was able to do so. We never did this before in the past. And the reason was because we would have needed to go through months of like kind of qualifying for the access to it, and he needed to go through training and all that
stuff. It's not just like you're Skyping, right? It's a special video thing?
Exactly. It's specialty software because of like HIPAA rules and stuff
right.
You kind of have to be confidential. So he kind of like sent me a confidential link. He told me like this call is confidential. So what happens is that he would normally have had to like spend a few weeks to a few months training for it. But this time around, because of everything that's going on, the software provider and Medicare are speeding up the process. So you'll get like access almost immediately. Like I was able to see my therapist online because he quickly sped up the process. But he said that Medicare is also sending him kind of the like documentation for what he would need to do. So this is going on, guys. This is like getting real right now.
Yeah. And I guess Medicare, it also makes sense for it to cover telehealth because Medicare covers the most vulnerable population against coronavirus, right? It is older folks, people with underlying health conditions. Medicare is a very useful thing. It is, not to get too deep into the weeds of this, but it is like a very successful social medicine program that seems to help a lot of people, which needs to be expanded. Which also many of the same people in this country who benefit from it fight against expanding it to everybody. We are topsy-turvy, this country, man.
Dev, man, you way to make me sad. But the other The other part of telehealth, right? I mean, telehealth is like a, I guess, kind of a vague term. It basically means going to get like health support on like through teleservices, which I guess tele is kind of a misnomer because it sounds like phone, but it's also online, right? And the other part to it is not just consultations, but getting your medication. Mm-hmm. And for us, I'm not sure if you know this too, Devendra, is that like our insurance kind of forces us to default to Express Scripts, which is a medicine delivery service. Yeah. So for us, our pharmacy is Express Scripts. And I think, I mean, our insurance provider is big enough that it seems like a pretty common practice these days, but Medicare starting to expand now and hopefully covering telemedicine as well.
And also deliveries, I assume, too, as a part of it. Like the whole thing about Express Scripts and other services like that is like you don't have to go stand in a line in your pharmacy, which is also you Absolutely. Putting yourself in danger of like catching whatever else. Like, don't go to the pharmacies, people. Try not to go to the doctor if you can.
Stay one home.
Thing, yeah. Yeah. One thing around this, by the way, like I didn't realize Express Scripts automatically allowed you to like you could request up to 3 months worth of your medication if your doctor allowed it. That is something we mentioned last week that Aetna is allowing to in general. CVS free deliveries, like check this out. If you need medication, look into your free delivery options. You don't need to use something like Express Scripts.
And what with Medicare now supporting it, I think that this is what will make telehealth like a lasting thing. It's going to become everything. And let's like not forget, telehealth has been around for a while. I mean, it's not a novel idea, of course, but like there was a wave of startups, like health startups, providing you digital consultations in the early days was for convenience. It was for avoidance of, like shameful topics maybe. And so I think that Roman, this company, when it launched around 2017 or 2018, it was trying to get men to talk about erectile dysfunction with their doctors, because often erectile dysfunction is like a check engine light for men's health. Like it's an indicator something else is up. So they did that, and they did dispense like ED medication. You would talk to a doctor first on their website and then get the right prescription, and then they would send it to you too. And they've expanded since to cover like women's menopause issues and symptoms. And actually, this past week too, the company announced that they're providing free coronavirus telehealth assessments online to basically nearly everyone in the US, which to me is stunning, because this past weekend something else happened. Like Google got outed as supposedly working on a coronavirus screening site.
No, it was more like the thing where your teacher's like, yeah, so hand in your assignment, right? And Google's like, what? Did I miss that class? I don't know.
Yeah. And I almost feel like the teacher didn't give that assignment.
This is a whole weird thing. So apparently, Verily, Trump mentioned that Google's health, subsidiary Verily is working on a coronavirus, testing site on Friday. And I don't know if Google realized this. I don't know if Verily realized this. And something was launched, I think, by Sunday night in select counties in the U.S. But I've seen journalists try to use it, and it seems like it is basically a BuzzFeed quiz. Are you going over your symptoms? And even people who clearly say they have the symptoms, the Verily site would not say, oh, you could potentially have coronavirus. So it seemed like a very useless thing.
It's so basic. So I was kind of involved during that time of when Trump brought it up during his live press conference, and then Google scrambling to provide some sort of answer, because it was 4:30 p.m. on a Friday on the East Coast. And I didn't bother to tune into this press conference because I was busy with a review video, but also just like, Trump's not going to say anything about my beat, which is Google, right? out of nowhere, they're like pinging me. The whole team is like, Sherlyn, where are you? I'm like, God, what? I was shooting a video, and they're like, we need to talk to Google right now. I was like, and then I tried to talk to Google. They were like dead. They were like radio silent.
We're building the website right now. We can't talk.
They're scrambling to build it. And I talked to a friend who works there, and they, after the fact, like on Saturday or Sunday, were telling me like, yeah, the whole reason we weren't responding to people is because we didn't know what the hell just happened. Yeah. And I was like, that makes sense.
I'm laughing, but I'm also crying at the same time, because this is the state of the world we're living in.
I'm fully shaking my head. Here's what's funny, though. When you said that the website was basically a BuzzFeed quiz, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's so shocking to me that Google, maybe like they haven't been working on this for a long time, right? But Google hasn't been able to develop something as sophisticated as what Ro already has. And that I think is because Ro already had the infrastructure in place, kind of, right? They already were providing doctor consultations and basic screening questions before.
So you're saying Ro, this is still Roman, right? They just changed their name. They simplified a little.
They changed it to Ro because they weren't targeting just men anymore. So mm-hmm. Roman seemed like a little gender specific.
A little Trojan-y. Yeah.
I don't know what Trojan you're thinking about.
Exactly. I think that connotation was right there. And they're like, let's expand a little. So that's useful. That's pre-screening, but what does that entail? That's just like going over the questionnaire.
Yeah,
it's the same deal. But it doesn't mean you're going to be getting a testing kit. They're just like prepping us for the point where testing kits are available, right?
Absolutely. So I want to like tell you a little bit about something mm-hmm. else that does that. So Ro, what it does is you go to the website, you do the screening questions. It feels like a BuzzFeed quiz, but that's kind of a way to field the mass populations that will be flooding their sites, right? Like the quiz is a very easy way to do that. At the end of the quiz, if they determine that you do have certain more concerning symptoms, they'll direct you to an online doctor consultation. And if you've been to like a telehealth consultation before, you will know you sit in this kind of like a vague waiting room. It's a digital waiting room. So you're being placed on hold with an operator.
Yeah. Are there
and
digital the doctor... magazines just sitting around in a dirty playset that all the kids have played with?
Yeah. They'll tell you to go watch Verily's BuzzFeed quiz. but basically, yeah. And then when the doctor is ready to see you, they'll click on your link and you'll start this video conference. And that's where the doctor will talk to you directly. They're still not seeing you. And so, like, let's be clear, there's limits to telehealth, and we'll get mm-hmm. into that later. But then after the doctor talks to you and they're like, okay, you do need to go see a doctor, that's when you're, like, more reassured about going out to see a doctor because your case is specific.
Sure.
That has nothing to do with, like, actual testing kits being sent to you. But another one of these wave of startup companies that started around the same time as Ro called NeurRx. I always call them NERCs, but apparently they're pronounced
NERCs. It's spelled NERCs.
It's spelled NERCs, but it's NURX, and it's NeurRx. And they actually announced this week, too, that they're doing a similar thing as Verily and Ro, which is they're doing that home screening telehealth service. But at the end of all the steps that I just explained with Ro, after the doctor visit part of it, if they determine that you're definitely showing very confirmed symptoms and you're someone who needs testing done, they'll send you a home testing kit. And I talked to them and I was like, yo, like, how? Mm-hmm. Where do you get this testing kit from? How many do you have?
Well, their whole website right now is just like, yeah, we're going to have this process in place eventually, .. The single greatest problem I think we're facing as a country and as a society is that there just aren't enough of these kits out there.
Absolutely.
I'm sure a lot of these startups want to be like, hey, we're gonna solve this crisis, guys, except they need the same kits that everyone else is waiting for, right?
Yeah, that's a big problem, and that's why a lot of like these services aren't providing that. So NeurRx has always provided some sort of home testing kit delivery or home like medication service. I believe they started out with birth control, which is, I have a bad experience with them. I'll get into it. But so I asked them, I was like, so how many do you have? And like, what is your testing kit? Like, and when are you going to launch? Like they, at first, early on in the week, like Tuesday or so, they were like, definitely by the end of this week.
Yeah.
I was like,
they're
okay.
Like, look over here, and ran away. Yeah.
And then yesterday they replied to my email. I asked again and they were like, well, in a few days, definitely in the coming days. And I was like, okay. But they also said that, so they have a very limited supply of testing kits. So the regular COVID-19 testing kit is a nasal swab. So you stick basically a Q-tip into your nose, get a bit of mucus, put it into the testing kit. But for the one that NeurRx is working with their test provider to send to people is a throat swab. So it's a little bit different. They're working with a provider that's working on this. So this is private sector stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same kits that the CDC is giving
Man,
to hospitals.
I thought the private sector would save us in the midst of a major health crisis. That does not seem to be happening. I don't know what's going on here. I don't How are we going to actually access this thing? Is this accepted by insurance companies or what?
Yeah, whenever it's live, Neurex, the way it's always operated is it does work with insurance. Some companies cover it. So if your insurance already covers some sort of telehealth, chances are Neurex is not a huge problem. So I used Neurex in the past to try to get birth control. And even without insurance coverage, it was going to be a lot cheaper than typical birth control.
Right,
it's going to
be
$15 for like a 3-month supply. And that's not bad at all. And then what happened was I tried to get my insurance to cover the consultation with NeuroRx, and they found out and they were like, no, you have to use Express Scripts. And so I had to switch to Express Scripts through our insurance because I think they have a deal. So
yeah,
NeuroRx, basically, they should be offering this for free. And I don't know whether they will be. It doesn't seem very clear yet from what they've told me. But at least the screening part of it seems to be free. And then the home testing kit might cost you some money. Knowing NeuroRx and how it operates, and also knowing that the entire industry in the startup area is trying their best to provide these services for free now, it's likely they'll offer it at no cost, but I can't guarantee that. I will say, though, I know of another company called Kensho Health that's a little kind of off the mainstream in terms of medicine. This is more spiritual and holistic.
Nope. I'm going to shut this down right here. We're not going to talk about crystals. We're not going to talk about chakras.
It's half therapy. Like they have therapists, so that's fine. And they're providing all their services for free. So
I won't blame this company too much. I once had one of my first primary care physicians, like as a grown up, was a homeopathic doctor. And I did not realize that. So, and this was a guy who would just like fight me at every chance to like get medication. He was like, try oregano.
Wow.
For
oregano.
Yeah, skin problems. I'm like, dude, you're a doctor, right? So I feel like, yeah. We're going to have to fight all this stuff with all these services. One thing about telehealth, I feel like the convenience is a little scary at times. Like I use Keeps to get a little medication to save my receding hairline because it's like it's all I've got, really. I have a decent amount of hair.
You do.
So I'm trying to keep that good. And I went through Keeps. It was a very simple process. I took a couple photos of my hairline. They're like, yes, you have a receding hairline. We're going to send you medicine. Mm-hmm. And they're sending me this stuff like a 3-month supply, every 3 months, basically. I'm paying this money. I don't know. Like, I don't have the follow-up I do with a real doctor. I don't know, like, what the effects would be if I had a bad reaction to this medication. I'm not sure how responsive they'd be to helping me. So it seems like a lot of these companies are out there just trying to be like, here's birth control, here's erectile dysfunction pills, here's like stuff for your hairline. We can ship this out easily. It's not that hard for us to remotely accept it, but there do seems to be limits in terms of what they can do.
There are, and I will say I had a horror story from all of this happening. Like I ended up in the ER because I was using the birth control from Neurex and then using the Express Scripts generic version. Like the switch wasn't it, which I should have been talking to a doctor the whole time.
Okay. So this wasn't NeurX's fault. This was our system's fault because our insurance is locked into a certain delivery provider.
Well, NeurX also didn't make me feel very reassured during the process of getting the birth control, where I talked to a doctor and it seemed very robotic and it seemed like, no, you'll be fine. You'll take this. It's fine. Take this. It's fine. Like they really just kept feeling like they were pushing that brand.
Well,
on
also
me.
These doctors are like, we are just like a list of clients for them.
Yes.
So they're going through like a check, like a Google to-do sheet of their patients. And it's even less than like traditional medicine where you have people complain about having only 10 or 15 minutes to talk to their doctors. These things are like, you have a Google chat and that's it.
100%. 100%. There's too many limitations to telehealth, but it is a good starting place. Mm-hmm. I think, though, like you did bring up a point while we were talking about this a while ago, that like there are ways to make it a little bit better for doctors to get clearer information about our health from home. Things like your smartwatch bells. Like already a lot of smartwatches work with like or send your data to your doctor when you allow it, according to HIPAA policies anyway.
Which one is that? I think Apple Watch could. They do a decent amount of data collection. Maybe Fitbit stuff, but I'm not sure how deep.
So it's Apple Watch and Fitbit, and they take your pulse. They do your pulse patterns. They also do, like, they look out for AFib and your, you know, depending on if your doctor recommends that you wear. And a lot of doctors actually have been recommending people do get Fitbits. I don't know whether because Fitbit talked to them and was like, push this on your clients, or they just really want to get people active and moving. So they're like, do 10,000 steps a day and I will check your activity log, that sort of thing. But yeah, that's one of the ways that, like, telehealth can be boosted from our end and with gadgets.
Right. Because right now it's basically just video chats, right? So I can imagine, like, smartwatch would certainly help, like something that monitors you throughout the day. There are also things like blood pressure monitors, smart versions of those, smart Wi-Fi scales. There are things out there that can provide more information to your doctors. There's a certain convenience to that. I think that's a good thing for people to have in their homes. If you're having issues where you need to check your blood pressure often, you should get one of those devices. When my wife was, you know, when we just had our baby, that was a very important thing to be able to check blood pressure at home just in case there were any complications. A lot of people just rely on going to their pharmacy or something to go to one of those, you know, arm pumps and check it there. These things are cheap. They go for around $30 to $40, and some of the more advanced ones can go for like $70. The downside of that convenience is that this is all more data that's being collected by these services, being sold to who knows what. And we also don't have a unified system of providing this stuff to doctors. So all of this is a good reminder that we really need like a secure, stable, universal health data system in the US. That would make things a lot easier for everybody.
Do you think it's possible?
I think it's possible, but we can't even get a freaking BuzzFeed, you know, site right.
Yeah, no, definitely there's going to be a lot of data collection. Like when you go to these sites, like bear in mind, you're not only entering whether or not you have symptoms, but you're also going to have to go through things like your social, like I don't know about your social security number, but your name, your location, right, all of these things that identify you. So there needs to be better protection. And again, like right before we recorded this podcast, news broke that the senators, you know, super on top of stuff, they're questioning Alphabet, which is Verily and Google's parent company, about the data collection here and how the company plans to protect the data that's being collected.
As they should.
As they should. And I think that that's good news that the senators are starting to ask Alphabet, because you know what? It's still targeted COVID-19 specific data, right? I mean, in terms of the symptom checking, but they really should start thinking of asking every telehealth company to really provide that data protection. Like I said, I think that some services are already trying to do their best, like the software that's facilitating some of these telehealth services, but it's at every turn. It can't just be the video conference mechanism. It needs to be the databases that are storing these. What are the doctors using? What are the clinics using? What are the pharmacies using? These all
this
need to be
protected.
This is why
regulations are good. We need smarter people who can actually manage all this stuff. So I feel like the big takeaway for a lot of this is that it does seem like telehealth is a reality now, right? It's not just like a thing that's going to appear and go away as people have better access to their doctors. I think a lot of people will be sold by the convenience of this, just like the convenience of work from home. So there's at least like a fundamental societal shift here in the U.S. going on, right?
I think Medicare and the senators asking Alphabet about Verily are two ways the government, you know, are paying attention, and because they're paying attention, it will become a lasting thing. I do want to say though that like we talked a little bit about the limits of telemedicine and telehealth, but like there are still other limits. Like, I mean, when I did a flu, and I thought I had the flu, and I saw a doctor online, she was like, "Okay, touch your neck for me. Does it feel painful?" I was like, "Lordy, lordy, this is not how I want to do this." And there are limits. Like, there are a lot of things you still need to be in person to see. Like, your doctor's not going to be able to check out a mole through your webcam and be like, yeah, that's skin cancer. You know what I mean? Like, no.
Although, eventually, we are talking about, like, what the future of devices will be. I think we're looking at smartphones with, like, really crazy high-resolution cameras, right? And also things like, what is it, 3D depth sensing?
Yes.
I can imagine, like, something using a combination of these other tools. Maybe like something that can actually detect like a heat map and stuff. That stuff will be more and more useful for things like skincare. Yeah.
I think that, yes, 108 megapixel sensor that we were talking about will help. And still though, there are, it can't completely replace things. You do sometimes, at some more severe cases, I think, need to go into a doctor's office still, and they're never going to fully go away. I will say, I think that, the one thing that is really hard to replace with telehealth is therapy. I think people, I read art therapy a bit, and a mm-hmm. lot of people are freaking out about talking to their therapist, not in person. Instead, they're doing it either over the phone or through video conference. My own experience was pretty okay. Like, I thought it was surprisingly better to talk to my therapist online. And here's how I know it's going to be lasting too, is mm-hmm. that he said, now that we have this set up, we can actually do this moving forward. And I was like, oh, now yeah. I have this as an option, and that's incredible, because sometimes I travel a lot and I can't go home for therapy until...
Oh, that's great. That's yeah. great. I do know, like, you know, I know people who also use teletherapy as, like, their main thing. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like you need at least some in-person contact at first to build that relationship. It yes. is kind of hard to do this with just, like, a random, you know, oh, you've been assigned to this doctor by this service, and now you're chatting online. Open up your deepest desires and darkest fears. You know, that's tough.
Is that I am working on a story about that. You'll oh. see it on the site soon. But yeah, I mean, clearly this is going to change things for us. And I think that the role that tech plays in this is great. And I'm quite happy about it.
Cool. Okay, why don't we move on to something fun, Sherlyn? I think the fact that we're all, so many of us trapped at home,
yep.
Our only ways to be social is social media. It is funny, yeah. like, we've reached this point after talking about the perils of social media for months on end. Now it's like, oh, save us, you know, Facebook newsfeed, save us Twitter. It's not great. I don't know
if they're going to save. They're, I feel like it's
save
a double-edged
sanity,
sword.
At least, yeah.
I feel like it's both good and bad. And I think mm-hmm. that for me, I've tried to kind of stay away from Twitter because it was causing me too much. Like,
it's pretty bad. Yeah,
it was making me depressed. But there is a lot of good. I feel like for me, it was really heartening to be like to know that celebrities like, say, Chris Martin of Coldplay or John Legend, they were like streaming concerts on Periscope and Instagram Live for free just to keep people entertained. I know, like, other people are doing it. I think Colbert, mm-hmm. you were saying, was I saw Colbert's videos from his bathtub.
Yeah, Colbert is shooting his show from, like, his bathtub, from, like, his backyard and his fire pit. That's cool.
Yeah.
I think a fun thing, by the way, Conan O'Brien just, you know, they announced that they're mm-hmm. actually going to be going back to daily shows.
Sweet.
Because he has a lot of staff. He wants to keep them employed, you know, and yeah. they can remotely produce shows via iPhones and pipe in guests via Skype or something. So
yep.
they're still doing it. It is interesting to see how culture reworks itself around yes. this. One of my favorite things was it WWE Monday mm-hmm. Night Raw.
Oh,
so
my God.
There's no more audience. So now it's just wrestlers like talking crap to each other in like an empty stadium, and somebody plugged in Twin Peaks music behind it.
And I started listening to him. They took my crooked little world and they turned it into a majestic funhouse. You broke me, John. But the fiend, he put me back together.
So it's like, is this crazy Lynchian wrestler delivering a monologue about his life? And it's amazing. So we are seeing some really cool things, like all of this happening, because that's, we're social yeah. animals, and social media is all we've got now, right?
That to me was like what I was most excited to see come out of this. Like, I knew creators were going to get creative, pardon the repeat word, but like they were. And I these are entertainers. Their job is to entertain us. And I agree that we should try to keep as many people employed and working during this time as possible. This is creative. I love it. One of my favorites is Ellen DeGeneres. She's been posting a lot more on her social media, just complaining about how bored she is, but like just spamming all her celebrity friends on their phones. So every hour she posts a new Instagram story or video calling Justin Timberlake, Chrissy Teigen, I don't know who else she's called yet, but it's just like, are you bored? I'm bored. What are you doing? Show us your home. That sort of thing. It's really, really hilarious. So there's a lot of good. There's a lot of good.
Well, also, it shows they can produce a lot of the stuff without much effort too, which I don't know if I'm looking forward to that, but it right. is fun. It's keeping us entertained in this really dark time.
For now, I've been asking people to send their cute baby and animal videos too. It's adorable. And that's better than seeing the 700th article about how bad shit has gotten. So
yeah, it's okay to take a break, everybody. It's okay. Like, there's one thing, we're just kind of like staring at this monster trampling modern society in front of us, and we can't do anything about it. So do whatever you can to stay sane.
I believe, though, like, social media, like I said, is a double-edged sword, and there's a lot of bad going around on social media as well. Like, barring even just straight news, where, like, I think our producer Ben was telling us about a BuzzFeed article that said every little bit of information that you mm-hmm. get in these times feels like a hit of dopamine, where you're addicted. You're addicted
to the news. It's the people sharing, especially these, like, weird coronavirus influencers. So this is a story yep. called I'm Not an Epidemiologist from BuzzFeed, the Rise of Coronavirus Influencers. Mm-hmm. And it is an interesting phenomenon of people who have a little bit of information and left to share it out there. And they'll get those likes, they'll get those retweets, except they're doing it to a point where we don't have all the information.
Yep.
Sometimes they're spreading misinformation, but they keep doing it because they're being rewarded by the systems we have in place.
So there's a few examples of this, right? Like, over the weekend, Carrie Hilson, who I liked, I think, tweeted about 5G causing coronavirus. And it was the most ridiculous thing. All she did was, and I don't think it was even her original thought, she just posted, like, screenshots of someone else's conspiracy that, like, oh yeah, China started 5G and people started dying. Then the US started letting out 5G and look, we're all dying. And, like, that's just, that's so, like, false, completely false. But a lot of people thankfully called her out for it, and she took mm-hmm. down the tweet, but it still spread. A lot of people are still like, don't use 5G. Meanwhile, welcome to Sherlyn's weekly WhatsApp complaining corner.
We need a theme song. Wah, 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 wah.
Wah, 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 WhatsApp. But my mom, and I lost it at my mom this week, and I feel very bad.
I wish I could record, like, these conversations between you and your mom, because I want to know how this goes.
So my main connection with everyone at home in Singapore is mostly WhatsApp. And, you know, my mom and my family, we have several chat groups. My mom started sending, well, my mom always sends a lot of dumb stuff, and she just forwards people's messages. So over, like, I think Sunday or Monday, yesterday, she forwarded something saying from one of her groups in WhatsApp saying, guys, don't use ibuprofen. It's been proven, or it's been found to accelerate replication of COVID. And then she forwarded another message saying, the NHS, National Health Service, NHS is saying, no, you, like, don't use ibuprofen, use paracetamol. And I was like, and also I'm doing the voices, obviously. Uh-huh. Anyway, I saw that and I kind of, like, something blew, like, my brain broke.
It's fundamentally bad advice, because people need ibuprofen to even survive this thing if they get it.
So let me kind of just tell you how all of this happened, because I got so mad that I did deep fact checking. I went deep. I was like, how do I prove you are wrong, mom, in so many ways?
Good luck.
I went deep. It started when the French health minister tweeted that ibuprofen, and he's the one, he was like, ibuprofen is going to, like, worsen COVID response, or your body's response to COVID. And then because a French health minister tweeted it, obviously uh-huh. everyone has to go and check, right? Like, all right, the health right. in the, like, so the World Health Organization had to be like, all right, here's what we're going to tell people. They sent a spokesperson out, and the spokesperson was like, there has been no conclusive evidence, but we're going to err on the side of caution and tell you to, yeah, sure, avoid ibuprofen. And then a million outlets, including, I'm not going to name the outlets, but a million uh-huh. outlets reported that as WHO cautions against using ibuprofen. So now you've got, like, a million articles saying the WHO has issued a warning against ibuprofen.
Even though it's more like a mealy mouth statement from them, and just being like, we don't know. We're not going to say anything.
It was just like, in an abundance of caution, they'll use, because ibuprofen compared to paracetamol is an NSAID, a non-steroid anti-inflammatory drug.
Right.
And it does impact certain people's reaction, like, especially people who have, like, lung disease and stuff like that. You know, it does, like, affect your immune system in some cases. But it's not been shown. First of all, I took mm-hmm. serious issue with the fact that the thing going around was that it's been so-called found to replicate the COVID, like, virus or something. And I was like, No. So I gave my mom a lesson in fact checking.
Did she? Well, here's the thing. Did you accept it? Because what I find, and I feel like a lot of people who have, you know, parents right now, it is very hard to convince them of anything. It has taken me a week to convince my parents, who are very stubborn, strong, you know, immigrant parents, to not leave the house, to not go to the store for like one goddamn thing, exposing themselves to infection. It is very tough out there. And it's funny, it's like the tables have turned, right? It's like they're the teenagers.
Yep.
And we're like, no, if you go here, you're going to get in a car accident. If you go hang out with your friends, something bad's going to happen. It's the tables have turned. But so how did this end up for you, Shirley?
My mom's reaction was to employ one of my teenage tactics. And she basically cold warred me. She basically stopped talking to me. I was like, okay. Because like, let's be honest, what I did here was to like send her a slew of messages.
Did you send it to her in private, or did you send it to her on the group chat?
Oh, this is the group chat.
Oh, no.
I shamed her in our group chat too. Aww. Like, so she sent like a slew of like ibuprofen messages. And I usually only respond to my parents or my family texts with like one-liners and smiley faces. So this time around, they got like a wall of green from me. Like it was the Great Wall of China of messages. It was like 700 lines of like how bad this information is, and you should never trust sources that are not reputable. You should go to the BBC. Yeah. You should go to the New York Times as the gold standard. And if you just looked online, there were 7 articles debunking that ibuprofen claim. Yeah. So like, I was like, this is my job. How dare you not fact check? Like, I said those things to her.
It is funny. This is like an impossible task. Like, it's an impossible thing to fight against, because it's so easy to hijack our brains and our reasoning centers for believing in conspiracy theories. That's why they exist in the first place.
Absolutely.
But also, I've seen a lot of like really things trying to be helpful. Like, was it Wu-Tang had like this image they were sending out about like, stay safe, stay home.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were like, if you have symptoms, go to the doctor. Would that is not the advice right now.
No.
Now the advice is stay home, try to take care of yourself. I've seen other images going around saying, kid, you know, check on the older people in your community. I'm like, no, don't. You're going to kill them.
You're going to send them viruses.
There is so much like well-meaning, but also misinformed things that feel so dangerous. You are a vector. Your children are vectors.
Yep.
And you got to keep them safe. So call them. Send them video messages, you know, video chat. I'm really getting everybody on board with video chatting now, finally, after I've been trying for years. Also, if you want to send them stuff, I realize grocery deliveries are kind of overwhelmed right now, but you can get people things eventually. So set up a grocery delivery order. Try to keep people safe.
Yes.
That's the best you can do right now.
I will say on like a nice little wrap up to that WhatsApp fiasco is that WhatsApp also announced this week, yesterday, that they are launching a coronavirus fact-checking hub in conjunction or working with the CDC and WHO to do like a fact-checking hub. I don't know what the impact will be on these forwarded messages yet, but whether or not they'll show verified news with some kind of visual signal, or you know, people are still going to forward messages to each other. But it is nice that WhatsApp is aware. I mean, this is an issue for the company since 2018. There have been reports of WhatsApp misinformation forever now.
Forever. This is WhatsApp messages and group chats have led to, you know, riots in India.
Yep.
People getting killed. Like, this is dangerous stuff. All spread, like, with the kernel of a text message on WhatsApp. So, yeah, this is where we are.
And this is the one good thing to come out of this global pandemic. I guess riots killing people didn't force WhatsApp to do something like this, and now they're having to do it. So yeah, that's a nice note to end this crummy saga on.
Okay, how about some tech news, some non-virus news? Sony gave us more details about the PlayStation 5, finally, after Microsoft has been having like a field day just divulging information about the Xbox Series X. Xbox Series X, there are YouTubers who have had hands-on with the hardware. We have a full breakdown of what that thing, we know what it looks like. We know all the hardware inside it. So this week, Sony basically just aired their GDC press conference. That's what was going to happen. So Mark Cerny, the chief architect of the PlayStation, stood up for an hour and talked to a very small auditorium. There were actual people in front of him, but the way it was shot looked like MST3K or something, of just like these cutouts. making fun of him. He is a very interesting speaker because he is a really smart guy, but his presentation is very much like almost Pee Wee Herman-esque. He is,
oh wow,
he's not like a strong speaker, but he's a good technical speaker. But anyway, let's talk about the PlayStation 5. And here's what we know.
Okay.
He confirmed that the PlayStation 5 has a 10.28 teraflop GPU with 36 compute units. And that's interesting because Microsoft chose to have 52 compute units instead.
Whoa.
They're running it at a slower clock rate. So I think what's really interesting is that both of these machines have very similar hardware. They are both powered by AMD's third generation Ryzen processors. They both have AMD's Radeon Navi graphics, actually the second generation of that. So on paper, these machines are going to be very, very similar. And I think the big takeaway for a lot of this is that basically they're going to be very powerful. They're going to look very good. They're going to be producing, you know, 4K gaming at 60 FPS, which is what we all really want right now. The key takeaway, though, is like there is a difference in how Microsoft and Sony is applying this hardware. So Microsoft is almost taking like a more just throwing as much specs as they can at the wall to make a super powerful system. We've seen the Series X. It looks like a desktop computer. It has a weird, like, unique stack design. It has a giant honking fan and a vapor chamber cooler.
Ooh.
It looks like a desktop. We don't know what the PlayStation 5 looks like. And across the board, you know, their CPU is a bit slower. The GPU is faster, but it has fewer compute units. The RAM is a bit slower as well. There's a bit of a trade-off.
Does it have some sort of cooling chamber? Because if it's running at faster
clock speed? Don't know. We have no idea what the PlayStation 5 looks like. It will likely have a vapor chamber cooler as well, because that's a smart way for hardware makers to pack a ton of power to very hot hardware in a very small amount of space. So the Xbox One X, which came out 2 years ago, also had one. And that is actually a really small, compact machine, but it's very dense because that cooler is super heavy. So these are going to be fast machines. I think that's the really interesting thing here. Sony really spent a lot of time on their SSD. And it's a custom PCIe 4.0 SSD that's going to be able to take in up to 5.5 gigabytes per second of data, of uncompressed data, 8 to 9 gigabytes per second when it's compressed. But that means the PlayStation 5 will be able to like fill up its 16 gigabytes of RAM in 2 seconds. That is a fast load time for a game like Spider-Man or something, right? Whereas the Microsoft's hardware is a bit slower when it comes to disk speed. They're both using NVMe SSDs, so no moving parts. Very fast and attached directly to the PCI hub. So that means that, you know, it's just fast. It's the fastest way to get storage to your drives.
So what does it mean, like, when you're saving your game, you don't have to wait as long when you're trying to load up a game?
Not just saving your game, it's loading. It's like it's loading big-ass textures, because these are going to be 4K textures, and it takes a while. You play a game like Spider-Man on the PlayStation 4 or 4 Pro right now, you have loading. You have to wait, like, sometimes 5 to 10 seconds of loading time. The thing with the PlayStation 5 is that that game will always be accessible. You may have like an initial load period to get into the game, but as you're going around the map, you won't really have to deal with that. One other interesting thing, Sony is going to be allowing you to use like standard off-the-shelf NVMe SSDs. Those are those ones that look like little RAM sticks, and you can plug it right into the system. Microsoft is going to be selling like this 1 terabyte external NVMe cartridge that's made by Seagate, and you'll be able to plug into the back of the console. We don't know what that's going to cost.
Is it for like storing games?
For storing games. Because that's the thing. Like, these things are going to have disk drives. We know the Xbox will. We don't know if the PlayStation will, most likely, because it's good to have. But you have to install your games. You can't just like plug in your game in and play it like you used to on the PlayStation 1 or something.
Yeah.
A lot of people are buying games digitally now, so you need that storage space.
Yes.
So storage is important. Loading is important. I think there are a lot of like good quality of life improvements we're seeing across both of these consoles.
Yeah. And we're expecting them, what, holiday season this year?
Holiday season. I did write that editorial a couple weeks ago about how, like, I think the Series X could make gaming PCs obsolete for a lot of people. And honestly, the same applies to the PlayStation 5. Very similar hardware, very powerful hardware. PC gamers are already scoffing at it, but PC gamers don't have access to PCIe 4.0 yet. So this is actually a place where these consoles will be ahead. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on. So I'm really excited about this upcoming console generation. Not excited about the annoying fanboy wars, which we're already seeing. But yeah, go check out my spec breakdown of what Sony is talking about. And hopefully we'll see some hardware soon.
So it's nice that you've had stuff to cover hardware-wise, Dev. Meanwhile, I am working on something that's really up my alley, but not so much hardware-oriented. I'm working on a guide to finding online therapy, or just finding navigating the world of therapy while we're all kind of isolated at home. The piece is going to be live, hopefully on Monday. And yeah, because I just have spent so much time researching this for myself, for friends. I have a lot of good tips, not just for the process of finding someone, whether or not you have insurance, because that's a problem, but also when you have found someone, how to prepare for your online therapy visit, like what helps and what doesn't, because it's a whole state of mind that you have to prepare for. So yeah, that should be coming out on Monday. So yeah, definitely keep coming back to Engadget and hitting refresh, because that's what I would do.
Just sit there and hit refresh.
Yeah,
it helps everybody. Yeah. So let's talk about some of our picks, the things helping us to stay sane as we're stuck at home. I've been spending a lot of time in VR. I can't say specifically why. I do love like teasing these things coming next week on the show.
You always do this. It's true.
Let me just say, though, I've loved VR for the past few years. I feel like the market has been kind of slowed down a bit, but we're seeing some really interesting things upcoming from some major developers who don't always release games very often. So I'm spending a lot of time in that. And let me just say, like, being in a game, being in a crazy post-apocalyptic world while it feels like we're edging to that in real life is at once trippy, but it's also, like, it's nice to literally get away from this world just a bit. Just a bit. There are lots of other VR things. I like to do Google Earth. I do this just for fun. So Google Earth has a really good VR app. You can, like, rotate the globe around. You can travel, and, like, it brings in all the, like, 3D mapping.
Where have you been? Where have you gone on this?
It's super great.
Yeah, but where have you visited on Google Earth? Like, what city
have you... I have visited places I want to see in real life, like Rio de Janeiro.
Nice.
Along, like...
Do you just go to Taipei and, like, stalk one of the cafes? Just like...
I mean, I go to places I've been. I go back to, like, my home street of, like, where I grew up in Hartford sometimes. I actually like to go to my birth country of Guyana and just see like what Google has covered.
Oh,
so you know, it's a nice escape, and it works really well in the Oculus Quest too, which is the portable VR headset. So something I can show my wife, and it's a good thing to have when you're stuck at home. I will say right now in New York, we're not literally quarantined yet. You can still go outside. You can still get some fresh air. So I try to do that when it's not super crowded. The sad thing is, like, when Sophia wants to get some outside time, I don't want to take her to the park because it's still super crowded. She can't go in the play stuff because the virus can, live there for a while. So there's this, like, patch of grass in between two streets in our neighborhood that is, like, pretty nice, and people sit there and have picnics. But it's literally just a patch of grass in the middle of the street, and we just hang out there, and she loves to, like, sit and play with the leaves and stuff. So that's my pick. Spend time with your family if they're around to keep you sane. I've been playing more Animal Crossing. Certainly a great game to dive into, also to get your mind off of things. My review is up officially. Check out that. I did a video for that as well. Sherlyn, I hope you get Animal Crossing, because I'd really like to talk about how games can help us stay sane.
Okay.
And meditative in an upcoming episode. And I've also been playing Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which is a sequel to Ori and the Blind Forest, I believe. It's a sequel to that game. I love Ori. I love Metroidvania games where you're like just a side-scrolling character going along a path and retreading paths. This game is a really big emphasis on combat, which is surprising to see. This is getting a bit nerdy, but it feels like the developers of this game really liked Hollow Knight, which is one of my favorite games of the past couple of years, and just straight up implemented many of that game's designs elements. It's nice to see. It does feel a little weird in an Ori game, but I'm enjoying it. So yeah, those are my recommendations. It's what I'm up to. Sherlyn, what are you checking out?
I have a surprise for you. So I like surprising Dev. Dev's thing is he likes teasing out his stories ahead of time. My thing is I love surprising Dev on this show while we're recording. I have a TV show recommendation, a Netflix show recommendation, and I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I'm bracing myself right now.
I feel like the arms
of my chair.
I love it, and I feel like you would too, except for I don't know if you've actually seen it. So either I am ahead of you and for once recommending something you've never heard, or I'll just fall flat on my feet. Okay, so I love the Korean show called Kingdom.
Yes.
It's so good.
I have not seen it yet, but I've heard a lot of good things. What is
it? Holy crap. It's like Korean Game of Thrones, but... But much tighter. So there's no dragons, but there are, well, instead of whites, there's actual zombies, right?
Actual zombies, yeah.
Actual zombies. It's but there's also people fighting for a throne. It's the Korean royal family. The crown prince finds
himself. It's set in like feudal Korea times too, right?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. And I mean, season two was just recently released. I've only seen season one because my friend and I watch it together, and we're waiting to the weekend to watch season two, which is a tough job. I cannot stop myself from wanting to watch all because it's so good. So like you said, it's a bit apocalyptic. It's like it's an infection, right? Like it's basically similar to what we're going through right now, except for zombies. But also it stars Choo Ji-hoon, and I love him. I love him. You can tell from my voice how much I love him, but he plays the crown prince, and he also played the crown prince in a show called Princess Hours that was a classic Korean drama from like at least 10 years ago. And yeah, it's so tight. It's so well produced. You know, Korean entertainment, honestly, for me, is so underrated. I really need to watch more.
I have a lot of movie recommendations for you, Sherlyn. Let's chat.
But
I've been meaning to check out the show. I do appreciate that the first season is 6 episodes.
Yep, the second one is too.
Yeah, so it's not like falling to the Netflix curse of being way too long and outstaying your welcome. I tried the first 3 episodes of Altered Carbon season 2 and I had to give up because like you're wasting my time with 3 episodes that could have been like 1 episode basically.
I know. Yeah, Kingdom is really tight. It's like every single episode is packed full of really interesting drama, really good plot progression. I think you'll love it. I just want Devendra to take my recommendations seriously, you know what I mean?
I will take this one seriously more than World War Z. How about that?
Yeah, do it. Watch it and tell me because I want to squeal about it.
Okay, folks, that's it for our show. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find me online at Devendra on Twitter. I podcast about TV and movies at /filmcast at /film.com. Sherlyn, where can people find you?
If you can squee about Kingdom without spoiling season 2 for me, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter.
You can email us at podcast@engadget.com, leave us a review on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. With that, we are out.
I know one of my people I follow on Twitter every day this week was like, is it Friday yet? Is it Friday yet?